Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Charles Hugh Smith. He's author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, Their Nearly Free University in the Emerging Economy, Pathfinding Our Destiny, Preventing the Final Fall of Our Democratic Republic, and Will You Be Richer or Poorer? His blog of twominds.com is one of CNBC's top alternative finance sites. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. I'm really looking forward to the topic today.
Sure. Yeah. Thought we'd do a topic discussion today on the parallels of today, of what's happening today in the economy and society to the Great Fire of Rome in 64 AD, July 64 AD. There was a big fire in Rome. And what happened before, what happened after, seems to have many parallels in today's post-COVID environment, and also what happened pre-COVID. So the sort of March timeframe as being the point of the fire. Your initial thoughts?
Yeah, it's a great topic, Richard, and I've covered historical analogs in a number of settings, including Rome and the USSR and revolutionary France. And I think I would sort of summarize what happens in these analogs is the elites and institutions no longer serve the public good, and they've failed to solve the problems that are novel, and so that's sort of the foundational analog we're exploring.
And you've recently written about those comparisons to Rome. I believe you're looking at 475 AD, right? A little bit later, also the USSR and France. Can you give a bit of background on those three analogs?
Real quickly, Rome was in its heyday from, basically AD 1 to AD 160. So the analog period that you've chosen is interesting because it's not the end of the empire, the 460s, 470s that I was discussing. So we're talking about an empire at its peak, and yet that doesn't mean that it responded effectively. And I think that's a good analogy to the present day, too. You don't have to fail at the end. You can fail at your peak. And so I think that's why don't we just move to your outline about the fire in Rome. I think that's a perfect setup.
Sure. So yeah, the fire happened in July of 64 AD. And before that time, it was very interesting because there was already massive government debt in the system in the Roman Empire. The emperor at that time, Nero, proposed to the Senate, the Roman Senate, to level a third of Rome to build palaces and projects. This proposal was denied by the Senate. And so today, if we look at in the pre-COVID era, we also have massive government debt, and there have been proposals for various infrastructure projects, initiatives, fiscal stimulus as well. So that's an interesting analogy in terms of what happened before. Your thoughts?
Yeah, very clear that government finances are a key element of social and economic stability. And so if you can sustain a certain amount of debt when your economy is growing, but if it ceases to expand, then the debt becomes unsustainable. And I think that's part of the analogy that you're going to be drawing here. Mm-hmm.
So we have the fire in July of 64 AD, and approximately two-thirds, more or less, of Rome is leveled. So it was actually more than one-third, the initial proposal by Nero. We're not implying here that Nero caused or set the fire in any way. That's been a question of considerable discussion over the years, but we're not here to discuss that. It's not likely because he was in a nearby town several kilometers away. But yeah, we're just looking to make the analogy here of the COVID to fire, to the fire. So basically comparing, you know, what has happened on the COVID virus to the fire. So let's explore what happened then as a potential forecast of what could come now, what could happen in the coming months and coming years. As I mentioned, we're not here to explore who or what caused the fire, or, you know, for that matter, who or what caused COVID. Not relevant here. No conspiracy going on. And we're just looking at doing the analogy. What's interesting is in each situation, we do have the government, in that case, the Roman government, taking advantage and opportunity of the situation. Very similar to now, where there's even express wording of using this as an opportunity. So if you look at the World Economic Forum website, there's a section on the Great Reset, where there's mention of using this as an opportunity. Also, other government leaders have mentioned that. So what do we have? So after the fire, we have a situation where the Roman government gave subsistence money to the workers. And that's actually very similar to now, where there's subsistence stimulus, or probably not a good word, stimulus, but just ongoing funds that are intended to keep the cash flow of the economy and the system going. So not really fiscal stimulus in terms of generating infrastructure projects. But so there's an analogy there, very similar. And then after the fire, there's a proposal after, you know, two-thirds of Rome has been leveled, similar to now. You've got massive government projects being proposed through various initiatives, including the World Economic Forum Great Reset, Agenda 2030. There's lots of individual country fiscal stimulus initiatives, the European Recovery Fund. So there's several of that happening. And these projects are somewhat similar to what happened during the Roman Empire, when there was a lot of government projects at that time built on Rome. So palaces, different infrastructure projects. And so now you have this type of situation as well. Also, a similarity was the government then did no cutbacks or budget cuts, very similar to now, no cutbacks or budget cuts happening. So that's so far an analogy. Your thoughts so far, Charles?
Yeah, and again, I'm commenting on a sort of the general context of Rome in that era. Is some of the infrastructure projects that were proposed were so expensive and marginal utility that they weren't completed. I believe there was a grand canal that was going to be dug, and, you know, new roadways and this kind of thing. So The point here is you can have infrastructure projects, but they don't necessarily add economic value, or their cost is prohibitive. And the projects that you've outlined with palaces and new temples and that kind of thing, they didn't really add any productive capacity to Rome. And so there was kind of just like a waste of money, if you will. And so taxes go up to fund, you know, projects of marginal utility. And I think that's one of the risks here in the new Green Deal and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. We generally take a view in our firm in terms of looking at the principles of the Austrian School of Economics for economic thought and perspective. And it's interesting because the idea there is a strong emphasis on the free market choosing winners in the economy versus government. Government tends not to be good at picking winners in terms of either companies or industries. The economy is best at that. Similar to, if you think of an analogy with the rainforest, very hard for governments to manage what's happening and all the intricacies of a rainforest, but left to itself, all of the underlying hidden forces, if you will, in the rainforest do the balancing and optimization in a natural sense. So while we do agree very much with all of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, very noble goals, Agenda 2030, the UN Global Impact initiatives coming from the European Recovery Fund, all very noble, we would emphasize that the best way to approach is more of a market environmentalism approach to that, allowing the economy to pick the winners. Yes, and that's very similar to what's happening today. So all of this resulted in a lot of projects, as you mentioned, that were not optimized for the economy or for their use. There was a lot of more control that was happening at that time by government initiatives and projects, very similar to where things are going today. The economy was very negatively affected. What happened then was there was a period after where it led to much higher taxation, which is very likely to happen now. At that time also, there was a debasement of currency. And the way they did it in those days was they chipped off some of the material off of the coins, or they put less silver content, less gold content into the coins. So that overall resulted in a debasement of the currency. Very similar to now, although the mechanism is different in terms of printing large quantities of money, quantitative easing. So that was also very similar. So we had higher taxes, debasement of currency. And then there was also a confiscation of assets at that time. And now that could take the form of in a number of ways. So there's the potential for cryptocurrencies, private-based cryptocurrencies, if governments so choose that they may not allow private-based cryptocurrencies to coexist along government-based cryptocurrencies. Although if they are in conformance with regulations in the financial system and banking system, that might be allowed to be okay. There's also perpetual bonds. So this is a concept where government debt can literally default, but in a way that is not as bad as actually just not paying anything. The idea here is instead of paying back the principal. The principal will no longer be paid. So like if you have a $100,000 bond, essentially what would happen is only the interest, you know, the yield on that bond would be paid in perpetuity in a form of an annuity sort of. So that's the concept of perpetual bond. So that's likely to be considered by governments to address the unsustainable government debt levels. There's also potential changes to rules in RSPs and 401k plans. So this is the concept that overnight a rule can be instituted on these type of government-based plans to force the account holder to hold a certain level of assets, for example, in provincial, state, or federal government bonds. So let's say, you know, maybe 50% of your assets in these plans must be in government bonds, right, to promote at least some demand for government bonds to continue. Your thoughts on these?
Yeah, it's interesting to consider that the Roman authorities attempted their own great reset after the fire, right? And I also am thinking of the great pandemic that swept through the empire about 100 years later in about 168, 170 AD. And that is generally considered as the first great crisis that weakened the empire. And so not to draw too careful in an analogy with COVID, which is not a plague and was not, it's not as deadly as that's what swept through the empire. The point being that Rome attempted several great resets. Some were more successful than others, but they all carry the risk of weakening the economy and social cohesion. And so I think the things you've described about the post-64 fire, that's the analogy, that the Great Reset isn't really solving the problems. It's actually increasing them because it's doing more of what failed in the sense of creating inflation, increasing centralized control, and squandering scarce resources on marginal utility projects.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you mentioned inflation. So another analogy that happened was the idea that this all led to food shortages, which is similar to now, where we're seeing supply chain disruptions along the supply chain of food production and distribution, along also with protectionism forces as well, all contributing to likely rising inflation and even stagflation, where you have rising inflation and declining economic activity at the same time. So that's likely to happen as well if this analogy holds. There was also an environment that led to revolts. And this could happen as well. I mean, there's a lot of civil unrest globally at different levels, you know, politically between different parties, as you see in the U.S. And just internationally, a lot of unrest as this unfolds. So there could be potential there. During that time, there was the Jewish-Roman War, 66 to 73. And so, yeah, that's a potential as well. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm reminded of Michael Grant, who is one of the experts in the Roman history. And he identified a couple of points that he considered fundamental to the weakening of the empire. And one was what he called the undermining of effort. In other words, those people who were working hard to fix problems were undermined by the leadership and the institutions. And I think you can draw parallels to the present day in that regard. And then he also felt that the elites and the institutions failed to respond to the novel challenges. And they basically just did more of what failed spectacularly. And I think that's another parallel with today. And then a third thing he observed was that a lot of the most productive people opted out. In other words, as taxes went up and constraints increased in a sort of stagflationary spiral, these people opted out. They either moved out of Rome, they joined a monastery, this kind of thing. And so that bled the empire of some of its most productive people. And I think we're seeing some evidence of that as well.
Yes, exactly. There's different layers, it appears, happening where you've got some people that are moving from the cities to the suburbs, or from the cities or suburbs to the countrysides. And that could mean, exosurbs or very far from city centers, or into jurisdictions that may be easier to live in. You've seen a lot of the wealthy have gone to these, bunkers or whatever that they've had set up in New Zealand, different places, and some of the islands in the Caribbean, St. Barts and all these places there. So there's movement there. There's also these programs now where even the middle class with jobs can literally take their jobs and go and live in these places where it may be easier to live. But, it's sort of a negative to where they're coming from, because now they're spending their money in those jurisdictions and not where they're, where their job is based. So that's also happening. So that's actually representing brain drain and wealth drain already happening. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, Richard, and I know you wanted to talk about if this analogy is playing out, how do we respond? And that's, I think, what we're talking about here is clearly finding a jurisdiction where it's more live and let live, like less centralized control, less repression, and actually less resources available to monitor and control every aspect of everyday life. And so that would an environment where there's more live and let live is more appealing to the class that I call mobile creatives, people who can create value remotely, who have some capital, intellectual, social, and financial. And so when we talk about magnets, locales being favorable to capital, it's increasingly not just financial capital, although that's one element, but it's being attractive to intellectual and social capital. And so you want to find those places that are attractive to other mobile creatives, and then you've got a synergy, and it's much more likely that there'll be jobs and opportunities in that kind of environment, right, which is flexibility, adaptability, innovation, is encouraged, where the status quo basically suppresses all of those elements, because it's high taxation, high regulation, and controlled by cartels that want to impose the existing business model and so on. So I think there's a lot of places both in North America and globally that, that have some of those attributes.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And in your recent books as well, you emphasize local economy, decentralized economy, which is the opposite of what we saw, like in Rome. We had the centralization economy, and even now. Your thoughts?
Yeah, to echo the comment I attributed to Michael Grant, you want your effort to not be undermined by authorities and institutions, right? And if you're basically spinning your wheels, you're not able to get ahead, and not being able to fulfill your abilities and talents and goals, then you've got to move to some place where your effort is not being undermined. And so in terms of, as you say, decentralized, localized, any place that's generating its own energy, food, it has plenty of fresh water, it has a functioning judicial and financial system. These are all pluses, and places that are entirely dependent on foreign capital, foreign resources, food flown thousands of miles. This is a very unsustainable and fragile sort of environment. And so you want to choose a place that's anti-fragile as opposed to fragile. So, and as I say, there's a synchronicity here where those places are going to attract other people who have great ideas and energy. And so you want to be with those kind of people.
Yeah, exactly. And in terms of overall career aspects, the idea of emphasizing skill sets that are in demand, tradable skills, globally competitive skills, think outside the box, maybe businesses internationally, globally, or in different jurisdictions, and perhaps focused in areas of engineering and infrastructure, civil engineering, environmental systems, right? Because those will be needed as these infrastructure projects are rolled out for emphasizing sustainable development goals. And obviously also in the medical sector, the fintech sector as well, for the fintech, for the online type of systems, banking being disintermediated as it has been happening for several years now in the medical sector because of the challenges with the COVID environment. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we're entering a period of, you know, it's destabilizing. The old business models are becoming obsolete. And so anybody that has flexibility, adaptability, and sort of a hybrid range of skills, sort of cross-discipline, then they're more prepared to solve whatever problems are arising. And, of course, what every employer wants is someone who can just solve their problems without a bunch of management and problems. So the more problems you can solve with your cross-disciplinary skill set, the more likely it is that you're going to be creating value for somebody or your community.
Exactly. Great. It's been a great, fascinating discussion on this analogy. So we've ended with some positive notes, some positive guidance to be able to weather this storm that's happening. Because if this analogy does bear there's a lot of these negatives that could come, which was similar to what happened after the 64 AD fire.
That's right. And so we have an opportunity to let go of what's obsolete and embrace, you know, better, more sustainable, more efficient, more decentralized models of governance, entrepreneurship, and stewardship of the planet.
Well, great. Thanks very much, Charles. How can our listeners learn more about your work?
Yeah, please visit me at oftwominds.com, and you can download free chapters of all my recent books.
Great. Thank you very much.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.